Welcome to Top Practices with Stephen J. Anderson. If you believe that your team is your most powerful case acceptance tool, that if they are good enough to hire, they are good enough to train, and that you must be as good on the inside as you appear to be on the outside, then we have designed the techniques and systems for team case acceptance that will take your team practice performance to the top. Here's your host, Steve Anderson.
Welcome to Top Practices. It's Steve Anderson, and I've got a special guest today in my ongoing research into sleep and dentistry. I'm excited to have Dr. Kent Smith, one of my mentors in the whole sleep area. Dr. Kent Smith, for those of you who may not have ever heard of him, which would be highly unusual if you haven't, but let me give you a quick background. Dr. Kent Smith is a diplomate of the American Board of Dental Sleep Medicine and American Sleep and Breathing Academy. He is the president of the American Sleep and Breathing Academy. And in 2007, he was asked to start a sleep curriculum at the Las Vegas Institute for Advanced Dental Studies. And in 2012, he was the first person in Texas to be awarded the Dental Sleep Medicine Facility Accreditation. He runs two sleep practices, two locations in the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex, and educates dentists from all over the world on sleep and how to incorporate it into a general practice as well as how to make it a focus. He's been doing that for over a decade and a half. So Kent, welcome. Thanks for sharing some time with us this morning. As you know, because you've been along in this journey with me, I am coming up on my fourth anniversary. Surgery, double jaw surgery that I had done that fundamentally changed my life, totally changed my sleep pattern, totally changed my quality of life. And I have you to thank for a lot of that, for putting me on that track. I was of hundreds of thousands of people in this country that did not realize what the real problem was. I always thought I had a lot going on, and it was just anxiety that was keeping me up at night, and that was not it at all. It was, I had a genetic, very serious sleep issue. So I'm a big believer in it. My diagnosis started in the hygiene room, started in the dental practice. Otherwise, I don't know how I would have ever really gotten down to the crux of it. You have developed over the years an entirely separate practice. You started treating sleep in your general practice and then evolved that into now two different locations here in Dallas. Take us back to how you got started on this in the very beginning out of your general practice, and how what I want to focus on today is how every dentist can start having conversations with patients about sleep, even if they're not treating it yet. How did you get on the path of doing this in your general practice?
Well, that was about 25 years ago when I started doing it. So I can't remember exactly how those conversations went. Okay. I started seeing some appliances come in, and that was at the very beginning of the development of the sleep dental medicine curriculum that started about 25, 30 years ago. So what I tell new dentists now, because I get asked that question a lot, I tell them that they just got to start looking in the mouth. You know, we spend as dentists an hour with patients, and MDs spend maybe 5 minutes. They usually don't even see the patient. It's the PA that sees the patient. So we have the best opportunity. And so I would just suggest, you know, you're looking in the mouth anyway. Look in the back of the throat as long as you're looking in there. And if you see a crowded oral pharynx, just simply ask the question, hey, how are you sleeping? Are you sleeping very well? And most of them will be honest, and they're not going to say, why do you ask me that? I mean, we take blood pressure, and they don't say, hey, why are you doing that? Right? So we treat more than just the teeth. And so I suggest that you just ask them how they're sleeping. It opens up a lot of questions. If they say, why are you asking me that? You know, you can say, well, first of all, I see in your health history, you're taking Atenolol, Prevacid, asleep, you're taking Ambien. You've got some sleep problems here, right? So the health history is very revealing. And then you can also talk about your new patient intake form, which I suggest having something on there about snoring. Maybe just ask the question, have you ever been given a CPAP, and then do you wear it? Because a lot of these patients have been given a CPAP, don't wear it, and then don't know anything about telling their dentist about it. So even if you don't treat it, I wish everyone would at least be familiar with some good questions to ask. I mean, you could even say, I've got family and friends. I know people that through poor sleep have developed serious health issues, and I don't want you to go down that road. You know, I care about you as my patient. I treat more than teeth.
I'll tell you, along those lines, how powerful what you've just said is. I had a conversation just this last week with one of my nutritionists. I've got a couple that I work with. And so he went through a battery of questions about my sleep pattern. I mean, it was exhaustive. He must have asked me 5 or 6 questions, and how are you sleeping? How many hours? What's your typical routine? I mean, he was getting in depth. And so I was checking the box, telling him how awesome it was. Now he knows what I've gone through. And so I got done, and you know, I said, look, it's 8 hours a night and I feel rested. I feel awesome. I'm sleeping all the way through the night, the whole deal. We got done and he said, well, you're the only one. I mean, he was serious, you know, because the problem is so prevalent, especially with aging America and all of the, what we've done to ourselves genetically with the food supply and that whole deal, which is another topic. It's out there and it's big.
Yeah, the problem is people tend to profile patients too, and they only ask those that are overweight. But I mean, just yesterday, yeah, exactly. I had a 310-pound man he had mild, very mild sleep apnea. And I had this skinny flight attendant that had severe apnea. You just can't tell by looking at the person.
Nope.
I'd ask the questions.
It's not all weight related. A lot of this now is genetic, and it's, as you and I have talked about before, a lot of this develops in vitro. I mean, we're born with it. Okay, I'm gonna give you a scenario. I'm a dentist, I don't treat sleep issues yet. Should I be talking about something I don't treat? And if so, then what direction? If I bring up the topic, then I gotta point them in some direction. So
sure.
If I'm new to this, where do I start? What do you recommend that I do so I don't just leave them hanging?
Yeah, it's interesting because I really think that's why most MDs don't talk about sleep. They only had about 2.5 hours of sleep education in medical school. And so they're afraid if they broach the topic, the patient's going to ask them a question and they're not going to know how to respond. So they just don't even bring it up.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm afraid that dentists will believe as well. I mean, we didn't get any sleep education in dental school. But if you've got some kind of referral source, I mean, if you ask the question about CPAP, if you ask if they snore, if they say, you know what, I was given a CPAP years ago and I can't stand that thing. Or if they say, yeah, I feel really fatigued in the morning. I mean, you ask about fatigue and sleepiness. And of course, you're looking at the health history. You see hypertension, which is the very first thing that we see on many of these patients. So if you see something that sets off an alarm, you know, have some referral sources set up. If you don't want to treat, you don't have to. Just be aware that 25% of your patients coming through the practice have sleep apnea. If they're 65, 50% of them have sleep apnea. So you've got to start asking some questions. If you don't want to treat them, that's fine. 2.4% of my new sleep patients come from dentists. I only know this because I just did my stats for 2018. So, there are significant numbers of dentists that do not want to treat, but at least recognize the problem.
So a good referral source would be, for example, not all ENTs address this. I went to an ENT the other day and I asked him, do you check for sleep apnea? And the response was, well, why would I do that?
Yeah.
So I know not all ENTs do it.
No, they don't. No, a board certified sleep physician.
What's that?
Yeah. A board certified sleep physician would be one of the first ones because they obviously talk about sleep and they have a very vast knowledge in sleep. And if you've got an educated dental sleep medicine specialist in your area, they're not going to, if they're ethical, they're not going to steal your patient. They're going to send the patient back. And I'm afraid that's one fear of dentists. If they do send to a dental sleep medicine guy, they're not going to get the patient back, but they will. So two avenues. And if you've got that patient that it was already given a CPAP, said, I'm not going to go to that sleep physician because they're just going to give me a CPAP, which is true.
Dental sleep, we'll talk about this in a minute. You would have some resources for that. All right, you talked about the dental health history form. Can we talk about that for a minute?
Certainly.
Whether you treat it or not, whether you treat sleep or not, what, in your view, should be non-negotiable questions that should be on every dental health history form that have to do with sleep?
Well, I think you should be asking, as you referenced, number of hours of sleep. When do you go to sleep? When do you wake up? I mean, that's going to be very telling, because it's not just quality of sleep, it's quantity of sleep that we want them to have as well. Some of them are just burning candles at both ends. They're just too busy, and they don't put sleep on their to-do list. So I really enforce that, number one. Number two, you've got to ask if they snore, or have they ever been told they snore? Guys will never tell anyone that they snore because they've never heard themselves. So, yeah, they say, well, my wife says I do, but I don't believe her. But with these smartphones, it's amazing what they're coming in with, because their spouses usually record them snoring, and that's what convinces them when they come in. Anyway, ask if they snore. Ask if they've ever been prescribed a CPAP. I mean, that gets what we call the low-hanging fruit, those people in your practice that don't know there's another option. We had a patient yesterday we were going to be delivering an appliance on. We confirmed the appointment the day before. His wife said he passed away this morning in his sleep.
What?
He was 2 weeks younger than me, and I could not believe it. But he spent 4 years intolerant to CPAP before he ever figured out there was another option, and we didn't get him in time. This is tragic, but unfortunately, when we treat these patients, we don't know that we're preventing them from passing away in their sleep or falling asleep at the wheel and killing a family of four, but we do know when they die. And so it's unfortunate, but I tell dentists to do this. At least you need to know that you are saving lives when you treat this.
Big time.
So, all right. So then you're looking at this. You've got a lot of questions on the health history that already tell you that they've got a sleep problem.
Right.
I wrote an article about 10 years ago called A Nocturnal Look at the Health History.
Oh.
And it was all about your average health history that you never even look at. I mean, a lot of dentists, all they do is have the patient fill out the health history, and then they don't pay much attention to it, which is kind of sad.
Where's that article? Is that accessible somewhere?
Yes. You can probably Google Nocturnal Look at Health History and probably find it. If you can't, I'll be glad to send it to whoever asks.
Okay. Perfect. We'll come back to that in just a minute.
All right.
That's awesome. All right. Let's move on to, okay, you got the questions on the health history that at least will start the conversation. And I'm, as you know, we talk a lot about this in our TOPS Total Immersion course. The dental health history is one of the best conversation starters, because if they write it down, they have to talk about it if you ask a follow-up question. As you know, because we've talked about this, it's one of the most overlooked case acceptance tools in dentistry, because everybody gets in a hurry and they don't ask follow-up questions. All right, so beyond the conversation, if a dentist were gonna take the first step towards integrating any type of sleep treatment into their practice, what do you recommend as the first step? How do I get started?
Well, there are some good instructors out there that I do suggest taking a seminar. I think a lot of dentists, they don't know if they want to do it or not, but it helps to get some training. And during that training, you can just make the decision at that point. You know, I just don't want to deal with this. I don't want to treat it. I don't want to deal with medical insurance, because it requires some education in medical insurance, and dentists don't have that. And you've got to work on referrals and everything else. It's like building an entirely new dental practice if you want to build much of a sleep practice. So it's a lot of work, and they may really not want to hassle with it, but at least it will open their eyes, and they'll know the kind of things that they need to look for in their current patient population. Because as they get further on in dentistry, as their careers get prolonged, they're going to start seeing more and more apneic patients. As I mentioned, that Medicare population, 50% of them have it. So the average 65-year-old dentist, 50% of his patients, if they've aged with him, are going to have the problem.
Okay, we're going to talk about your seminars in just a minute as a place to go. Obviously, you've done you're doing more for sleep education than probably doing the most of anybody out there. So I want to come back to that in just a minute. All right. So you've been treating sleep. You started this how many years ago?
About 25 years ago.
25 years ago.
Yeah.
And you and I have talked about this, and you just a moment ago referenced this. You know that I am not a believer in retirement. The statistics, on average, the average person, life expectancy after retirement is 4 years. Some people beat that, but I'm a firm believer that we are wired to have a purpose and be productive, not to go hang it all up and do nothing and you know, watch TV all day. So I think everybody needs a purpose, whatever that looks like. At our last Leadership Academy, where you were, we talked about planning the back nine, which is a Roy Hammond concept, which is you put a lot of work into planning your career, and you ought to put as much time, effort, and energy in planning, you know, post, you know, drilling teeth, what you're going to do that's purposeful and have meaning. So how do you view sleep apnea treatment as a way to lengthen your time that you'll be able to help patients? Talk to me about that.
Yeah, well, when I stopped doing any restorative dentistry, my back and neck problems went away. I really don't worry too much about disability anymore. I mean, honestly, I've considered just dropping my disability policy. I'm not sure what it's for. I could practice this without any arms or legs and one eye blind. I could do this till I'm 90. I'm telling you,
an interesting visual.
You don't have to worry about disability anymore, because all I do is talk to patients. I mean, that's it. And if you've got properly trained team, they take impressions, they deliver the appliances to patients and, you know, adjust the appliances and talk to them about side effects and all the kind of stuff that goes into this. And so I've got 6 trained sleep assistants, 3 in both of my locations. And so I can go on a 2-week vacation and it just keeps going. For this last Thursday and Friday, I was out of state. We saw 10 new patients on Thursday and 12 on Friday, and I wasn't even in the office. That's awesome. So that's the kind of thing that you can do. It's going to be a much easier retirement for me. I won't be called retirement, but I think this is one reason why in my seminars, a lot of older dentists are coming, because they realize this is something that they can do. It's getting difficult seeing as well as they used to. Their hands are not as steady as they used to be. And a lot of dentists that do sleep right now have had things like double carpal tunnel surgery and a lot of issues that have caused them to go into this field, whether they want to do or not.
Huge market for it. In your view, just as a footnote, who else is looking for this? If a dentist isn't looking for sleep issues, who is? In the medical world, who's looking at this? Who's looking at the airway?
Well, ENTs, maybe.
Maybe. Right? So who goes to an ENT?
What's that?
Who goes to an ENT?
Well, yeah. They usually have to be referred to one. Some have already been there because they know they've got nasal blockage, mm-hmm. and they'll end up at the ENT, and the ENT might ask some sleep questions. And there's basically 5 specialties that can become board certified in sleep, and ENT is one of them. So I think we're seeing more ENTs that are doing that. But still, they're going to be surgery first, and a lot of patients don't want to have surgery like you did. You know, that's not something most people will do, to be perfectly honest.
Right. So I guess my point, and this is the reason I'm so passionate about this, because it changed my life. Short of initially my hygienist bringing it up and asking me very pointed questions that had to do with my sleep pattern, I think I'd still have the problem. I don't know who else. My physician would have never identified this. My physician never asked me about my sleep. So short of it happening in the dental practice, I don't know who else would identify it.
And then our patients see us every 6 months. We have them in the chair an hour. Yeah, we are the front line, I think. We are the ones that should be screening and getting patients diagnosed and into treatment if there's a problem. There's no question in my mind I sent somebody out about 5 years ago looking at health histories in physicians' offices. I said, I want you to go to 50 physicians' offices in the next 2 days. She did it. One out of 50 had anything about sleep on the health history. One. Wow. Yeah. So we've got to do this.
All right. Talk to us about your seminar. So you've obviously figured out how to do this in your own practice. You teach and train other dentists on a regular basis. So tell us about the courses.
Well, I do 4 courses a year in the Dallas area. It's a 2-day seminar, and it's meant to take you from A to Z where you can start screening and treating patients after you finish the course. You can go to 21stcenturyseminars.com or just Google my name and sleep seminar and you'll find me. It's not difficult. But then we do have
there's not another Kent Smiths doing sleep seminars?
No, not that. Okay. We do have a yearly round table that you've spoken at a couple of times, which is a gathering of all these dentists that are already doing sleep that we bring in guest hosts and speakers and things. But the main, what we call the retreat, is a 2-day seminar here in Dallas.
Perfect. And like you mentioned before, I mean, if you haven't incorporated anything, that might be a good place to start, at least to get an idea of what treating sleep initially looks like and everything that's held. There's some significant detail in this. To do it right, there's a lot to it.
Yeah.
And I appreciate that. What you've developed over the years is a detailed system.
They don't have to come in and buy any equipment. They don't have to do anything like that. It's a very inexpensive thing to get started in your practice.
As long as you understand the basics, and I think the biggest thing is, until you start talking about it, like we've discussed today, questions on the health history form, a few short questions, especially in hygiene, I think everybody would be shocked to find out how much of this there is out there when you bring up the topic. How many, and as just a last point, many people who have sleep issues don't realize it's sleep apnea that is the issue. They don't know the signs and symptoms.
Right.
Yeah. So, short of having the conversation, they may never find out. All right. So my favorite question, and I always end on this one. If you were starting all over today in practice, knowing what you know now, what would you do or what would you do differently?
Well, knowing now how I can affect marriages and lives, which I was not taught in dental school, if I'd known that when I first got out of dental school, I would probably start treating this immediately and not wait. Of course, back then, there wasn't much known about sleep, and so there wasn't any education. But these days, yeah, if I was starting over and at this day and time, 85% of these patients were undiagnosed 30 years ago. They did a new study 4 years ago, still 85% undiagnosed. We got to find them.
So there, yeah. It's huge. Market's out there.
Yeah.
Plenty of need to do it. Kent, thanks for being my mentor and getting me started down this path. I feel better. My quality of life is, I can't even, there's absolutely no comparison. Huge difference in my life. So you're making a difference. Made a difference in mine, and you're making a difference every day with dentists and patients. So thanks for making a difference.
Oh, you bet. Happy to do it.
And thanks for being our guest today. So
enjoyed it.
Anything about Kent Smith, just Kent Smith sleep seminars. He's huge. All of just do an internet search. It's all out there. And as part of this podcast, Kent, we'll link the nocturnal look at sleep. Cause I think that and how to incorporate that, that sounds like a huge resource that everybody ought to have.
Sure.
Perfect. Hey, have a super day. Thanks again for being with us today.
Dr. Kent Smith. Appreciate the invitation.
Have a super day. It was my pleasure to have Dr. Kent Smith as my guest today. As a summary of our conversation, take a close look at the sleep-related questions on your dental health history form. We've linked with this podcast, Dr. Ken Smith's article on that topic. Even if you don't have sleep-related questions, there are questions on your health history already that are indicators of compromised sleep. So that's number one. Number two, have a discussion with your team on how you can discuss sleep-related issues at the hygiene visit, at any visit with new patients, as well as existing patients. Dentistry is the first line of healthcare today. Many issues like sleep will never be identified for most patients unless we bring it up and we're the first ones to talk about it. My problem would have never been addressed and never been diagnosed if it had not started in the hygiene room. So this is a huge, huge area, whether you treat it or not. It's an area where lives can be saved. Third thing, just as a reminder, and this was an interesting piece of education from Dr. Guy Lancey, who is the oral surgeon that performed my double jaw surgery that opened up my airway and changed my life. At our first meeting, and many of you have heard this before, he walked in and he took one look at me and he goes, "Yep, you got a problem." And I asked him, I said, "Well, how can you tell if I've got a problem if you've never looked at the diagnostics, the x-rays, the pano, all of those things?" And he said, "Look, I can tell by looking at the structure of someone's face if they have a sleep problem." And what he explained to me is that if you were to hang a plumb line from someone's forehead and they were standing straight, that plumb line should touch their chin. They both should be out the same distance. And if the chin is at all retracted behind the forehead, that is a sign, a symptom of a restricted airway. And I've never forgotten that. I cannot walk through an airport anymore without just going person to person and say, "Yep, you got it, you got it, you got it, you got it." It's not the telltale sign, but it's one of the big signs that there is an issue there. So not doesn't necessarily have anything to do with weight. It just has something to do with how our skull is how it developed. And there's a lot of it going on. A whole nother topic about why there is so much of that today than there used to be several generations ago. So hope that's been informative and that it'll help you again consider the direction that you decide to take in this area. It's a big market. There's a huge need for it. And dentistry has a big opportunity, I think an obligation to identify it and talk to patients about it. Thanks for joining us today for our podcast for Top Practices. Look forward to being with you again shortly for another episode. Have a great day.
You've been listening to Top Practices with Stephen J. Anderson. You can follow Steve on Instagram at @TheStephenJAnderson and on Facebook at Stephen J. Anderson. If you haven't yet, go to Apple Podcasts and subscribe, rate, and review this podcast. Join us next time. Thanks for listening.